Hello! Welcome to the Mind Buffs podcast. I am your host, Matt Demwasek, and today we are here with...
Kayla Unra.
Please leave a message. The question we have today, an age-old question that for thousands of years people have been trying to figure out is, when exactly did curiosity kill the cat? Kayla, explain.
The backstory to this whole podcast is Matt messaged me. I'm not sure where he got this information from. I have my inklings. But the conversation that we're going to be having today is the difference between being inquisitive versus being curious. And my immediate response when Matt sent me those two words was, I feel targeted.
It's something that I've noticed in my personal life is something I've been learning, that there's a differentiation between the two. And as I've kind of been reflecting on like a pattern that I have in like having difficult conversation, that even in my own therapy sessions with my clients, I've seen a lot of people who have been called out by their partners for being cold and inquisitive. And it's interesting because like that's a word that we don't really use that often, I think, in like just common vernacular. And yet I've just been seeing this word come up more and more and more as like a negative descriptor of engaging in difficult conversation. And it just kind of got me to thinking of whether or not maybe it was important to find out what the difference was between being really engaging and curious and whatever this inquisitiveness is that people are using to describe an experience that they're not particularly enjoying. So yeah, I heard that you did a little research for the viewers and listeners today.
Very unlike me, being inquisitive into what we're about to talk about today. Just to add to what you're talking about, I think that a lot of the times when people bring the topic of being inquisitive within relationships to therapy, whether they're on the receiving end or the delivering end of it, there's so much emotional content being delivered there that either party may or may not be aware of. And that's kind of what we're going to break down today.
Okay.
So Latin roots of these two words, curious comes from the Latin root cure, which means why. And inquisitive comes from the Latin root quaeri, meaning to seek.
That's fun.
It is fun. I thought so too. So from what I learned is both of these words are in this broad spectrum of information seeking, trying to find something out. It's the process of which happens is different between these two.
Totally. Oh, I'm so excited.
So first, I think to lay the groundwork here to fully understand where we're coming from, there's two different types of curiosity in most of the most recent literature. And the first one is epistemic. Epistemic curiosity is joy that is derived from just the desire to gain knowledge. So you think about, you know, like a kid learning something, they're exploring, they're finding something out in the wilderness. That's what kind of I think of when I think of epistemic curiosity. Okay. Then deprivation curiosity. It sounds a little different, doesn't it? So deprivation curiosity is driven by discomfort or uncertainty reduction.
Okay, I really want to hone in on this. Uncertainty reduction, okay? Think about all of the stupid, avoidable fights you've had with the person you love most and ask yourself, how did it start? Did it start because someone in the conversation decided that they needed to know or understand something that they did not in order to proceed with the conversation? It is a personal, internal discomfort of not having enough information to validate the emotional experience that is currently being had. Oh, I just love the wording of that, like uncertainty reduction.
Yeah. And like you said, some of the information that I was reading about it is even talking about how deprivation comes from a completely intrinsic, cue to one of our previous podcasts, comes from a completely intrinsic place of motivation, whereas the epistemic curiosity may come from either intrinsic or extrinsic motivating factors.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think when that quote that you I think I've mentioned it on an episode or two already, like, be curious, not judgmental, like, is really building on like this like root of curious, which is that like excited, open curiousness of just like wanting to, in partnership with someone else, like just learn more, understand, not for personal gain, but to improve the relationship, increase mutual understanding. It, again, these are like slight differences, but we know, especially like in relationship, that the experience on the other end of whether we're being like really epistemically curious or inquisitive has a very different, like, visceral feeling when you're on the other end.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get into this a little bit later. I think a lot of specifically people that are in research and or science will hear you say inquisitive, like being inquisitive is good, right? Mm-hmm. That's how we find solutions to our answers. Mm-hmm. And it is. But when we also talk about it in the realm of uncertainty or those types of things, like working with other people, you can't necessarily get all of the data from the situation that you're in, then it becomes, is it helpful?
Right. Like, it doesn't feel good to feel like, you know, you're a mineral that's, you know, being extracted for resources, like by your partner. And inquisitiveness can have that unintended feeling.
Mm-hmm. It's an act of trying to settle something, I feel like, with himself.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. When we're talking about it in the sense of being inquisitive with others.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this wasn't because I've seen this in you, Kayla, but mm-hmm. more like a self call out that, I didn't realize until recently that it was a subconscious protective strategy to protect myself from like feeling discomfort, whether it was discomfort of not knowing or just a discomfort of an expected wave of big emotion coming that I think I've learned to kind of feign, right? It is a fight or flight response that is kind of new to the fight, flight or freeze response, is that feign is actually the fourth one now. But like a feign is where we kind of turn off our emotional self and we only become really robotic and logical. You might hear words like, you're so cold, as a response by your partner when like they're unsatisfied with like kind of your engagement in the conversation. And clearly that has been a learned behavior that I've had from like my own childhood. So I can tell when I'm becoming inquisitive now, and I don't like it, but it just happens so quickly. I need to learn and create space there to be different.
Mm-hmm. And I think if you've spent time with me, you'll know that part of my nature is I have a high level of being defiant around other people. And I think different people that know me explain that in different capacities. But one of it is, one of the ways that I explain, because I see it in myself often, is when something doesn't necessarily line up with my values, my thoughts, or it's attacking who I am as a person, I think, that's when that defiance comes out and inquisitiveness. Mm. Prove it. Mm. Right? That's what my brain is saying. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try and find all of the different angles that I possibly can to poke holes in that argument so I don't necessarily have to feel any emotion within myself. So it's similar to what you're speaking of.
Yeah. And it actually is one of like the four horsemen of the apocalypse and like Gottman, like relationship, like theory. It is a very, very, very common communication strategy that people use when they feel that they're in conflict, there's a difficult conversation. So it just feels like we kind of unassumedly, unexpectedly fell on like this conversation, but just realizing how layered it is and how interwoven it is to so many different areas of life that like we need to learn when it's effective to be inquisitive because our job demands it and we get lots of results for that. And when it's time to put the logical version of that down and to have more of an emotional engagement with like curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're trying, folks.
Yeah. So I think maybe if we talk about each one of them, right? So when we were talking about this, I think about curiosity to inquisitive kind of on a spectrum. And I also think about the positive and negative aspects of inquisitiveness. And today I think we're mostly going to talk about the drawbacks of it because we can all see that how is it helpful in different capacities of work in all of those different environments, right? Mm-hmm. But when we think about the idea of being inquisitive and the deprivation. So once again, reminding you that's uncertainty reduction. We talk about when are we starting to move from the idea of being curious to learn all the way to the idea of being curious because we're trying to reduce that uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. I need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all of this research, I want you to kind of think about it on that spectrum. One of the things that when I was looking up about curiosity, very interesting, is that when we have very little knowledge of something, or we're an expert, we have a lot of knowledge in something, those two spaces are actually where our curiosity dies.
Mm.
So when we have no hook, or we think that we're on top of the world with our knowledge related to something.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
So all the area in between, when we have a little bit of knowledge on something, that's when we're actually the most curious about it.
What the heck? Why? What? What's going on?
So from the neuroscientist side of it, when you think about the brain and how it interprets curiosity, when you look at the pathways that are lit up on scans of the brain, when people say that they're being curious or that they feel curiosity about a topic, it's the same pathways that light up in anticipation of reward.
Oh, I can smell the dopamine. I must go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. So to me, that state of not knowing everything, knowing some about it, is you almost have this hook to wanting to learn more and wanting to master because you're so close to almost receiving possibly one of those reward systems or dopamine hits, right?
Mm-hmm.
When that might not even be something that you anticipate will happen when you have all of the knowledge, what's there left, right?
Yeah.
And or you have none of the knowledge because there's nothing drawing you towards that.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I remember reading something about this where like it's literally ingrained into like our nervous system that like when we are experiencing confusion or we don't know something, it's like we are neurochemically like changed in that moment to find out the information for that reward. Yeah, for that reward of dopamine, that like it is literally a survival mechanism of like we are so intrinsically motivated to seek out that answer because it satisfies the discomfort. And we also experience like the joy of like that new skill or that new knowledge, which is what sports is like all about, is like constantly filling in the gaps with new acquired skills and knowledge and having that like that infinite skill gap, like just increasing awareness and getting dopamine that way. So it's wild that that is like totally connected to this conversation of like curious and inquisitiveness.
Well, and when you bring up the topic of that skill gap, right? We know that athletes learn best or accumulate skill best when the skill level is just slightly above their capacity, right?
Yeah.
So in curiosity research, there's something called the curiosity gap theory, which is just the idea that there is a cognitive gap between when there's deprivation from what you know and what you understand. Okay, so the gap between the knowledge that you have and the understanding that you would like to have.
Okay.
So that is the curiosity gap. They also kind of explain it the same way as like the same as other states would have been driven. So like hunger motivates eating, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing that gap motivates curiosity, which is why we say that people use curiosity as a motivator to learn.
Right. So then like, it just gets me thinking about something else. Like then what about like complacency, where there's like a complete like absence of curiosity? Well, I'm assuming so because there's no desire to learn or improve or work on anything. And it's just like, you see people for years and decades just kind of running this complacency lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So was there anything that you read that came up with that at all? Or
no, I didn't find anything about that. Like, I mean, I could postulate about what I think is going on in those situations, right? Like when we know about any diagnosis, the reward pathway is not functioning appropriately, right? So that would cause that complacency. When we think about depressive thoughts and not wanting to actually engage in doing things, we know that we have neurochemicals in our brains, our neurotransmitters in our brains that are not functioning normally, right? But I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I feel like you were talking about the curiosity gap and that how people with like no knowledge or people with all the knowledge stop becoming curious. Yeah, let me I'm going to think out loud. I think there's something here. I think of kind of the midlife. Look at a lot of people in my life where they have the job now. They got the house. The picket fence has just been put up. They just painted their door blue that they dreamed of when they were 6 years old. They had the baby and there's a dog because COVID happened and we all got fucking dogs during COVID. Well, almost
not all of us.
And I feel like the expected dopamine reward of achieving all of these things has been achieved. And now people just try to ride out the next 15 to 20 years of their life because they have the job, they have the house, they have the family. And I'm already seeing so many people in my life no longer being curious, no longer wanting to learn new things. I'm just trying to like hold on to this thing that I think to our society is supposed to be like the pinnacle of living. And so when I think of that theory you just expressed about mastery and like being at the top, I think that's the problem with like achievement-based identity or achievement-based self-worth is that like, if I achieve the thing, then I stop.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing left to grow, to learn, to stretch, to discover. So it's almost like complacency is like a societal red herring that it's a trap that we all fall into and to be like, I did it, I got there. And then we just ride it out.
Well, I think too, there's different types of like therapeutic modalities that talk about this picture image of self, right? They talk about you like frame almost this image of where will I be in 10 years from now? And we have such a stuck image of that.
Mm.
And I think that a lot of society motivates us to create that picture image of like what we will look like you said, in the midlife of like, you know, your house, your job, your kids, like whatever those choices may be for you.
Yeah.
But when we get there, I don't know how much we're encouraged to actually create that picture image past that.
Totally.
Right. Yeah. So if we don't have that discrepancy at all, where's the curiosity about like, where's my identity?
Oh my God. And in relationship, like when you've been with someone for so long, you kind of reach a point where you think you have them all figured out, where your brain starts to have conversations in the future that either prevent you from engaging in a conversation or making assumptions about where the conversation is going to go because we have settled into like complacency in the relationship. So we're no longer curious, which is why inquisitiveness shows up because when something surprising comes up that we didn't see, rather than being curious, we have uncertainty, deprivation, and we're just trying to satisfy our own confusion as to how this could be happening right now because it wasn't one of my what if scenarios that I predicted.
Mm.
I hope that made sense.
You know, 100% okay. It did. To me, at least. Yeah.
That's blowing my mind. It's like complacency in relationship creates inquisitiveness because emotion comes from more of a curious, excited, like you said, childlike excitement to like continue to learn or discover something new. So what you're saying is I'm an asshole because I've become complacent in certain areas of my life.
I mean, possibly. I also think about like, if we've never really thought past what that image looks like, how do we generate curiosity? How do we get that excitement and joy back of being open to learning new experiences?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're not constantly evolving in a relationship or not evolving as an athlete or like in your career, you just hard settle, hard complacency.
Mm-hmm.
And you never experience flow state again because flow state's a feeling state. It ain't a logical state.
It's almost like you become, like you said, an expert in those areas. I'm an expert in my relationship.
Yeah.
I'm an expert in, you know, I've been playing this sport for X amount of years. I'm at the top of my game. Yeah. What's left for me to learn?
Yeah.
All right. And I think when we, like you said, take that mindset, then we're only leaving ourselves open for deprivation curiosity.
Yeah. Damn.
We're both thinking.
Yeah. This is like an extra layer that I'm even in this moment looking back in my life and being like, wow, yep, I can totally, vividly, clearly see the difference between deprivation curiosity and epistemic curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Man, English sucks. Our vocabulary sucks. We just have like so little
words to describe the same. Yeah, the
nuances,
same thing, right?
And yeah.
And even when you look up some of the literature around, like, what is the difference between being inquisitive versus curious? It pretty much responds with, are you stupid? They're synonyms.
They're like, the same thing.
Like, no, but there's more. There's not. There has to be, because it feels different, right?
Yeah.
So some of the information that I did found about deprivation curiosity, now that we're on the topic, when people act from deprivation curiosity, it creates situations where they're actually, like you said, more likely to believe made up concepts and bullshit.
Hmm.
Is literally what the article said.
They called it bullshit.
They called it bullshit. Yeah. Because it increases openness to information, which also increases openness to misinformation, which is interesting.
Do tell.
How it does that?
Yeah, I'm curious.
Yeah. So, I mean, there wasn't, like, this article wasn't based on any, I think what you're looking for is like a little bit more of a neural pathway type response for me right now.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, I don't have it for you.
Okay.
But I think we could like postulate about what we think's going on here.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
Yeah. What's your theory?
I think, and what this article was talking about a little bit as well, is that in those situations, people are actually less willing to have their beliefs challenged. And when they're reading information and misinformation, it was actually interesting. They were talking about how they're categorizing the information into their long and short-term memory. And sometimes those wires essentially not get crossed, but they pull information from what they already know and then kind of assimilate the topic together. And so they're more likely to believe that that topic exists because they're less likely to want to admit that they don't know.
So it's, again, it's like a limiting belief, like protective measure, where like an individual is more concerned about not knowing or appearing that they don't know rather than being curious to learn something that they didn't know before.
Mm-hmm.
But the protective priority is I must appear as though I know.
I shared this story with you, I think, recently, and also some of my friends, but one of my I know flaws that I probably should work on is whenever anyone brings up anything that related to pop culture, I know nothing.
Mm.
And I don't care to know anything, to be honest with you. I don't have time to read that stuff. I do, but I don't.
Oh, no.
And my response is always, yeah, no, I totally know. And I know nobody who you're nothing. Talking about. And part of that comes from like that piece of, I don't want them to think that I don't know who this main character in this TV show is, because I don't.
Yeah.
I also just don't want to spend the time listening to it because I don't care.
Yeah.
Right? But I think that's also kind of that piece there too of like not wanting to feel uncomfortable of like, you know, name said important actor. Kayla doesn't know who they are or who I'm talking about.
Genuinely, I just really don't give a shit about what they're saying. And I think it's a waste of time. So I just try to, you know, pretend that I do. Is that what I just heard?
Yes and no. Yes and no. There's a part of that specifically when it comes to this topic.
100%, I get
but
it.
When it's related to other topics, right? I think we all have that tendency to somebody because we're like, crap, I can't believe I didn't know that, right? It's self-protective, like that uncertainty in that capacity.
That's funny. Okay, so anytime I hear yeah, call bullshit? Is that the tell?
I mean, you can try. But as I said before, I'm pretty defiant. So see how it goes.
Okay.
But yeah, so I think there's like other pieces that we could talk about how this deprivation curiosity can actually be hurtful for people, right? When we think about risk-taking behavior, some of that comes from deprivation curiosity of like uncertainty and not knowing and wanting to engage in that uncertainty and unknown, right? Like some people actually, we know, are biologically wired to want to experience that.
Yeah.
So it actually can increase the likelihood that people will engage in like those thrill-seeking type situations.
Hmm. Almost like theorizing, like maybe there's like a personality correlation between experiencing like more like deprivation uncertainty.
Maybe.
If like the way that you design your life when you're feeling most confident is around more like certainty and familiarity, that those types of individuals might unknowingly step into more inquisitiveness as a response to uncertainty because they're used to having more familiarity in their media environment. Yeah, I could totally see that for sure.
So my question to you is, how do you know when there's a shift in somebody? I'm not pointing my finger at myself right now. I'm saying in general, how do you sense that shift when somebody is teetering that line between inquisitive to curious? deprivation, curiosity type of stuff?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. I think I can answer that on three different layers. So I think there's the nervous system response. Like anyone can tell when someone is on a fight or flight activated level, right? We are primal animals. Like we have a huge part of our brain that is still that reptilian brain. And when I know that someone is being inquisitive, there's a feeling of I'm no longer safe. Like I can feel it in like almost like my diaphragm, kind of that space between where like safety lives in my gut and like the good enoughs and confidence and like, you know, I'm worthy kind of live in my chest. And like I can feel this weird sensation in my in the space between of like, oh, okay, we're no longer working together and there's no longer a dialogue. You are now talking at me or questioning at me rather than asking a question. So I think there's that visceral feeling that I've noticed. I also can tell when someone has turned off their emotions. Cold, I think, is a really terrific adjective to describe when someone is trying to engage with you purely analytically, only logically. And it's quite an uncomfortable feeling on the other end. Even if you're someone who predominantly does interact with people on a more intellectual level, even if you have just a small portion of yourself that's like emotionally engaged in the conversation, that's enough. Like people can feel any ounce of that emotional care in the conversation, but I feel like you can tell when someone has turned that off, it feels uncomfortable. And then I think even logically, the wording is more designed around decreasing uncertainty rather than kind of the wording of excitement of like, oh, I want to explore with you and figure this out. I didn't know that. So I think there's tells in all three of those the communication like levels. But I'm a sports psychologist. I spend a lot of time learning these things. So for you listeners, like maybe it's just trying to focus on one of those tells, or maybe one of the tells I just expressed, you're like, son of a bitch. Like that's what that is. And trying to pay attention in your personal relationships and in a safe way, not in a call out way, being like, hey, like I didn't realize this until now, but like when you start talking to me like this, this is how I feel. And I think this might be happening. So I think this conversation can be useful for just improving communication because no one's doing this shit like consciously, like intentionally. This is a really unique subconscious, like automatic response, I think, that happens for people.
Well, and I think like now that we've talked about, the receiving experience of it, I also encourage you to figure out if this is something that you've been listening to this and you're like, well, that might be me. Mm-hmm. I encourage you to figure out what your internal sensations are, whether it's like a phrase or a word that comes to your mind, whether it's something somatic for you. Mm-hmm. But I know because people have told me, and I can also feel it. Yeah. I can feel a shift in almost that energy within myself of when I'm shifting from like, tell me more to prove it, right? Like tell me to prove it.
Yeah.
And then maybe I'll be on your team. And so I think it's, even though you can recognize that shift is happening, it's really difficult to stop it because it's protective in some capacity.
So then what you're saying is, figure out what limiting belief is training Mr. or Mrs. Inquisitive internally and fire them or redefine their role so that inquisitiveness is something that I am in control of turning off or on, depending on the situation. Because if you're in a career where like you're a lawyer or you're a detective, you have to do investigation, you do like case working, at least on the paperwork side of things, be hella inquisitive, super useful. Not a great people tool.
Well, as we're talking about this, like I specifically think about the relationship between a parent and a teenager, right? And how I think a lot of the times parents meet teens with inquisitiveness of asking a million questions. No joke, your kid's going to get their defenses up and they're not going to want to have conversations with you about it.
Yeah.
You're asking to know, you're not asking to learn.
Yeah. And rather than approve it, it's more like a what the fuck is wrong with you, I think, sentiment when a parent is being overly inquisitive to their teenager, who is a very tiny prefrontal cortex. So maybe we can ease off parents. They're trying their best and their best is enough.
Mm-hmm. They're still growing the front of their brain. They're working on it.
Yeah, really cool stuff. yeah, I can immediately think of conversation I want to have around like leadership and curiosity and leadership and inquisitiveness. Like Alex and I just had a conversation around transformational versus transactional leadership. And I think that you see a lot more curiosity in transformational leaders and a lot more inquisitiveness, kind of like, you know, prove it to me today, you know, and more transactional leaders. And again, time and place, maybe some of it is good strategically in certain situations. But yeah, I would really encourage, you know, listeners today to examine whether or not my default in difficult conversation is to remain open and curious, or if I'm heading straight to inquisitive town.
Mm-hmm. What's the purpose of the questioning?
Mm-hmm.
What is it satisfying?
Yeah. Yeah. So again, this is not just a podcast that you can listen to and be like, oh, I know exactly who that person is in my life. I'm going to tell them to listen to this podcast. No, you're listening to this for some reason. So maybe it's you today. So I hope that you can take some of this information and figure out like what area of my communication pattern can I improve so that I'm making the people around me feel a bit more safe and a bit more comfortable to share information, which is your secret mission anyway. So maybe if you feign curiosity for now, maybe it's good enough until you actually learn how to keep your emotions online so that the other person is trusting you with the information that they're sharing with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, gang, thanks for hanging out today. And as always, if you think we're full of shit, let us know and we're happy to chat with you. Or if you think that there are some other language topics that you would like for us to explore, we're down. Sometimes we plan these things months in advance, sometimes the day before. Not saying that's what we did today, but maybe. So if you have cool ideas, we'd love to jump on what you think is cool as well. So thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.